Crude oil is crude. Natural gas is pure. That's why Pennzoil's base oil is made from natural gas, not crude. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30.
Today's opening tip, Dwayne Bacon dropping a G League season high 51 last night. So the NBA finally starts back up tonight, but so he hit the stage himself last night, Matt Barnes. Perfect time to cook, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think without having to say anything, he let them know they're making a mistake. He needs to come back up to the big ball club and he'll be ready for it.
This guy can really score. He can score in the NBA too if he gets an opportunity.
Maybe he won't even last the week there. We'll find out.
At the beginning of the year, he was starting. He could do it again.
Welcome to The Jump. I am Rachel Nichols. I am alongside New York Times bestselling author and host of the Hoop Collective podcast, Brian Windhorst. And he is next to NBA champion and co-host of Showtime's All the Smoke podcast.
You got some credentials up here, huh?
Look at multi.
You had a career high 38 points in an NBA game, and I didn't.
Well, so there you go. Thanks to Matt Barnes and Brian Windhorst for joining us. Coming up, we're going to run back the top 10 fails of this season so far. Matt, you came on the right day. There are plenty of options to choose from. Stick around to find out who made the cut. First, though, Zion Williamson has only played 10 NBA games, but he's already having an outsized impact on the league. His early numbers put him in the same company as guys like Shaquille O'Neal and Allen Iverson. And boy, was he fun at All-Star Weekend. I mean, fun if you're not a basketball rim because he bent the bat. Okay. It was a busy few days for the number one overall pick, but he did find the time to sit down to talk about what all of this has been like and how he's navigating the transition from high school folk hero to big man on campus to NBA stardom. Take a look.
Here is Zion. Got it again! For four! Welcome to the NBA!
You had a great quote. You said, "I expected to make an impact, but not anything like this." What has surprised you the most about what you've been able to do?
I think the thing that surprised me the most is how much my teammates looked at me and trying to make an impact. And I'm a rookie, and I thought they would kind of like let me kind of feel the game out and before they start giving me the ball a lot, but they trusted me.
What is it like going from just being in high school 2 years ago to being so famous now?
It's different for sure because, I'll meet high schoolers and I'll look at them and say, man, I was only there 2 years ago. It hasn't been that long. So being in this big business, this big platform of the game of basketball, it is a big adjustment.
What's sort of the strangest thing that's happened to you? Someone recognizing you, asking you for something?
I'd say it's the people that are, they try to be consistent. They just follow me, from shoot around to the hotels. They're relentless going. I go out to dinner, they're just, can you sign this? Yeah, they're relentless.
People are following you to the dinner table? Do they ask you for french fries?
Oh, no. they're not able to make it to the table, but they try to catch you as I'm walking in.
And what about that block? Zion from the weak side.
Can somebody from the 15th row throw that ball back on the court, please?
He looks like he's back at Duke with that block.
Man.
You're only 19 years old. You're the fourth youngest player in the NBA. Do people forget that when they ask so much of you?
I think about that. I think people do sometimes. But then I think maybe that's why I'm in this situation. Maybe they feel like I can't live up to this. Maybe they feel like I can't perform on this stage. So I just take the blessing and just keep hooping.
There we go.
Let's move it. Between the legs. There's your rim. It's been Zion.
You had an injury rob you of the first half of your rookie year. So how do you balance going forward, being competitive, wanting to be out there as much and going as hard as you want to, but making sure you stay healthy?
It's tough, to be honest, because I still haven't got my legs fully under me. And sometimes I'm like, I can go make that play, but somebody give me a look like, just let that one go. Go to the next one.
Wow! John Morant!
Ja Morant should be running away and hiding with this race when it comes to the Rookie of the Year.
The Rookie of the Year race was considered all but called for Ja Morant before you got on the court. Now you've had such a good rookie campaign right from the start. Do you think you should still be in that Rookie of the Year race?
Honestly, it's not even up to me. I'm just kind of playing and trying to get a playoff spot for my team. And if I win it, it's nice. But if not, it's fine.
Do you want it, though?
I mean, I do want it, but I don't get it, I'm not worried because I did miss half the season. And John's been playing incredible, so, I mean, he has earned it.
You mentioned playoffs, that March Madness feeling. How hungry are you for that in the NBA?
I'm very hungry for it. Who don't want to be in the playoffs? You know, that's a stage you dream about being on, and we have a chance to be on it, so we're going to leave it all on the court.
Are you going to keep surprising yourself?
I think I will keep surprising myself.
I love that little smile at the end. Mm-hmm. I think I will keep surprising myself. Thank you very much. Thank you to Zion for taking time out of his scheduled chat. It was really interesting to me to hear about people just following him to the dinner table.
Right.
And he is 19 years old. The Rookie of the Year race, though, this is the question. Mm. This is him compared to Ja Morant. And Matt, look, Ja Morant, clearly the front runner, right?
Absolutely.
He's played all of those
Absolutely.
Games. That number 48 is the most important number on this chart.
Yeah.
But given all the other numbers, do you see any scenario where Zion can catch Ja by the end of the year?
I don't think so. And it's not going to be for his lack of talent or the numbers he's going to continue to put up. But like you said earlier, he's played 40, Ja's already played 48 games. Like, what do we have, 25 games left in the season? so I think Ja has the Rookie of the Year sealed up. But I think the league is in good hands. You know,
right?
These two guys are going to be superstars. They're going to, you know, change their franchises for the better. And they're going to be faces of the league, you know, as soon as the older guys step away. So, like you said, whether he wins or not, I don't think it's a big deal. But I think if he was playing at the beginning of the season, he would have been an all-star and he probably would have been Rookie of the Year.
I can't remember the last time I was excited about a player as much as I have been excited about Zion.
Yeah.
And his first 10 games have only increased that even more. I voted 2 years ago for Joel Embiid as Rookie of the Year. He played 31 games. I felt strongly about it at the time. If I feel strongly enough about this, I may vote for him too. I mean, my vote is not settled yet. Ja has put together a very impressive resume. They are 5.5 games clear of the Pelicans, the Grizzlies are, to get that last playoff spot. And if Ja leads his team in the playoffs, he's going to win it.
Right.
But I don't regret voting for Embiid. And if I feel it's right, I'll vote for Zion. And I'm, you know, hopefully wouldn't regret that either.
Right. Well, look, you can take a look at how few games guys who have won Rookie of the Year have played. So this is not something that the writers usually hand out. I also voted for Joel Embiid in that campaign. So you see, the lowest is 50, right? Patrick Ewing, Vince Carter. Kyrie Irving won it with 51 games. Joel Embiid played 31 games that year. But my argument, and I remember you sitting and making it as well, is for those 31 games, would you rather have, sorry, I'm going to go to this backward. Would you rather have had Joel Embiid for those 31 games, or would you rather have had Malcolm Brogdon all season? That was the thing that I kept saying. And part of it was the case that Malcolm Brogdon had. Malcolm Brogdon is an impact player in this league. I am in no way saying that he is not a worthy person to be in the NBA, but he just didn't have the greatest rookie campaign. So Brogdon averaged 10 points, 2.8 rebounds, 4 assists. Embiid averaged 20.2 points, 7.8 rebounds, 2 assists. So to me, in that moment, I was like, look, I'd rather, if you told me I could have had Malcolm Brogdon for the whole season, 75 games he played, or Joel Embiid for 31 games, I would take the 31 games of Joel.
Right.
And that's really what I would look at here. And I look at Ja, and Ja's played so well in those games. I think I will end I'd rather have the Ja Morant.
Ja is going to win it.
Yeah.
But I am going to keep watching because my vote is not settled.
Yeah.
And in 3 or 4 years, I'd like to be able to do what I am with Embiid by saying, hey, I voted for Joel Embiid.
Right.
And if Zion owns the league in 4 years, I may be able to say that.
I think if there's a situation where there was another rookie maybe only averaging 10 or 11 points in that situation.
That's the thing, is like, who are we talking
about?
But
Ja has been so consistent throughout the year. And
this is important,
fans,
too.
And they're in the playoff race, which is huge.
They're directly competing for that 8th playoff spot, those two franchises, the Pelicans and the Grizzlies. So if Ja keeps his Grizzlies there and powers them into the playoffs ahead of schedule, that's worth stuff, too, in this Rookie of the Year.
And he's been spectacular.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. Spectacular.
Absolutely amazing.
So to me, it's less about how many games does Zion end up playing. I think the maximum he could play at this point is 37 games. And by the way, the Pelicans have a bunch of back-to-backs on their schedule. And David Griffin has said he does not expect Zion to play all of those. So it will end up probably being less than 37. What are you comparing it to with Joel Embiid? I was comparing, again, Malcolm Brogdon,
player. I don't care about the games. I'll just decide.
Coming up, Steve Kerr says Steph Curry wants to come back this season in spite of the Warriors' less than stellar record and possible lottery maneuvering. Hear why Kerr is so confident. We'll get to that after the break. First, though, it's time for our distant replay from this date. featuring Richard Jefferson,
oh,
guys.
Really?
He made distance.
I didn't know Richard could dunk.
Man, Rich can fly. I've been playing against him since high school.
Look at him.
That's why I never take charges.
Who did he take down?
Chris Bosh.
Look at him.
Look at that stare.
I always love seeing who's in the background, by the way.
From Jason Kidd.
That's why you don't take charges.
That's so long ago, the no charge.
Kyle Lowry taking charges in an All-Star game.
I'm incredible. I was scared. I'm glad LeBron got out of the way.
Yeah. Our NBA Saturday primetime game this week is Giannis and the Bucks, who have the association's best record, taking on Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, and the Sixers. Coverage tips with The Jump. We are your pregame show on ABC, 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 Pacific. And I will chat with Embiid on what it's like to face Giannis. Take a look. What's the challenge of going against Giannis and that crew?
It's tough. You know, in transition, when he has the ball, you know, it's hard to stop. You know, I feel like we got the good group of guys to limit him. Playing against him is always fun, and I think besides last game where I had a bad shooting night, I mean, we always go back and forth at each other, so I love playing against him.
You guys won big against them on Christmas Day. You had a rough outing against them in Milwaukee after that. You're pretty much going to have to beat them to get out of the East. That's the idea, right?
I mean, it's the NBA. Like, after last game, they beat us. He had a great game, and everybody forgot about Christmas. Just like the next time we beat it, everybody's going to forget about what he did to us last game. So, you know, there's always the next one, and, you know, we can only get better.
You can catch more of my conversation with Joel Embiid tomorrow right here on The Jump. But he has a point, right, Matt, that we saw the Sixers handle the Bucks back on Christmas Day. Very high-profile win for them. Probably the worst performance for Milwaukee all season. Embiid had 31-11. But then on February 6th, the Bucks beat the Sixers by double digits. Giannis had 36 points in that game, 20 rebounds, 6 assists. So which version of the Sixers, Matt, do you think we're getting on Saturday night?
It just depends. And I'm still not giving up on the Sixers. I think they definitely have talent. They're kind of just on islands, it kind of seems like, from the outside looking in still. But they have tremendous talent. They still have time to bring that together with the second half of the season. And the reason why I like them is because they have length at the rim. And that's the only thing that can kind of slow down Giannis. And then if they're firing offensively, I still think they have to figure out what Horford and Embiid and how they can play off each other. Ben Simmons needs to be a man down the stretch. That's what they need. And Tobias Harris needs to live up to that contract. But if all that happens, to me, I think they still have a very good chance of making the finals. And that's, you know, that's no disrespect to Toronto. I like Toronto. I like Miami a lot. I love the Bucks. But I really like what Philly has if they can pull it all together.
Rachel, I think it's time.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
This honor was bestowed on the Celtics last year. It is time to bring out the 76ers' cone of uncertainty.
Matt, I'm so sorry you're
I
here
have
today.
No idea what's going to happen with the 76ers. Could they lose in the first round? Yes, they could. They may not even have home court advantage. Could they win the championship? Yes, they could. Did either of you happen to watch the fourth quarter? Yes,
Producer
fine.
Kate is right.
Well,
martini glass of uncertainty.
I think if that's the way your head wants to go, I'm not going to stop you. Did either of you watch the fourth quarter of the All-Star game?
We did.
Who was dominating in that game?
Joel was a man down the stretch.
That was a man's game, and that man was dominating. To me, this was one of the... I'm not kidding you. You think I'm making fun. This was the most important part of Joel Embiid's season, to dominate in that fourth quarter, 10 points, like 5 that. Rebounds. Totally said, this is a big moment. I want the ball. Mm-hmm. If that Joel Embiid shows up, anything is possible for this team. If you are 25-2 at home, you have the capability of dominating throughout the East playoffs. They can do it. Well, do I think they can do it? I don't know. That's why it's a cone of uncertainty. That the Sixers are extraordinarily dangerous. And I walked away from Chicago the other night thinking this was a huge night. Maybe more important than anybody else is Joel Embiid.
What did you think of that fourth quarter on the flip side for Giannis, Matt? I'm curious, because I agree with you. You had all those guys at once, and it really did become a little bit of like, all right, here it goes. What can you do? And Giannis had a fantastic defensive fourth quarter, but
offensively. They stifled him. And to his credit, he's not going to be going against 5 All-Stars down the stretch, but they did what – Toronto did to him in the playoffs last year. They packed that paint in. They had someone up, a small guy underneath him, you know, similar to what we did with Dirk in 2007. We played a smaller guy on him, and then every time he turned, someone was on him. So they're strategically doing what they need to do in the All-Star game. But what I think the deciding factor is, we have to question what Embiid are we going to get. We already know what Giannis we're going to get. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think that's the key. If Embiid is going to be the man he was in that fourth quarter of the All-Star game, regaining his confidence, letting you know, I'm out here with the best players in the world, and I'm the most dominant player on the court, you know, for this stretch run. So it's going to be interesting. But like I said, as soon as we can know what Embiid we're going to get consistently, we're going to know how good the Sixers are.
Well, it's interesting. I'm excited for you guys all to hear this conversation tomorrow. He talks about how he needs to get his passion back, and we certainly saw that passion in the All-Star game. I want to switch over to Steph Curry. He broke his non-shooting hand, as we all know, back on October 30th. Now, ABC was at a Warriors game on February 8th, and Curry told Arlisa Salters that he is aiming to return the first week of March. Yesterday, Steve Kerr pushed back any outside discussion that the last place Warriors just shouldn't have Curry play at all. Take a listen to Steve here.
If the point is because he might get hurt, then what's the point of ever playing anything? I mean, people can get hurt any day, and I guess the argument would be, well, we're not going to the playoffs. So are we not trying to entertain our fans? To me, it's never been a question. As soon as he's ready, he's coming back. Our fans deserve it. We need it as a team to springboard into next year, and it's the right thing to do.
Do you think, Brian, that the Warriors were playing that music to troll the Cavaliers? No? Okay. I mean, look, what he's not talking about, Matt, there is the lottery, right? I don't think it's really about the outside noise about Steph not playing. Isn't really about, like, oh, Steph could get hurt, because he's right. Steph could get hurt
anytime.
It's not about, oh, we're not in the playoffs, what's the point? It's that the point would be some fans might say, hey, you get Steph Curry back, your lottery odds may go down. What do you think, or do you agree with Coach Curry? Just got to play.
I agree with Coach Curry 1,000%, and I hate that the NBA has become such a business. Mm-hmm. Like, we work our whole lives to play basketball. You know what I mean? We want to play basketball. I know Steph wants to play basketball. I know Klay wants to come back and play basketball. I know KD wants to come back and play basketball, but I hate the fact that it's such a business. Obviously, you know, these players are paid higher than they ever have been played, so you have to protect them. But at the end of the day, like Coach Curry said, at any time you can get hurt. Practice, car accident, knock on, there's just so much. We can't walk around in bubbles. So I feel if Steph is healthy enough to play, I agree 1,000% he should come back. If Klay has a chance to play maybe 2 or 3 weeks towards the end of the season, why not? The fans deserve it. It's a new arena. We know what they're building for next year, but if these guys are healthy enough to play, let them play.
It is a business. And you know what that business is? The business is entertainment.
Yes.
And those fans,
so it's a regular season.
Yeah. Those games cost money, too,
by the
way.
Especially there.
Especially the Chase Center. They want to see Steph Curry play. I completely agree with Steve Curry. He's like, he said it in the press conference. What do you think? These guys, people pay all this money for the Chase Center. They want to see Steph play. By the way, Steph wants to play.
Absolutely. That's the most important.
And this is one of the reasons why, as a secondary note, I advocate for a play-in tournament that includes the entire field. I believe you should have an 8-team single-elimination play-in tournament. Think if we had that in place this year. Think of what would happen if the Warriors could still play their way into the eighth seed.
Mm-hmm.
Playing their way into the eighth seed to play the Lakers in the first round. All right, that's not going to happen right now. But I believe that there is still value in the regular season. These games that they're potentially going to play with Steph, these last 25 games or whatever, 20 games, will make a difference long term. And I think Steve Kerr sees that, and I absolutely think that Steph, if he feels up to it, should absolutely play.
I think it's important too, because I want to see how Andrew Wiggins is going to
fit in
the stars that they have already. You know what I mean? Like I said, he's played amazing. We always knew he can get a bucket. He's been doing what he did in Minnesota right now. But how do you play with that next level of player? These high basketball IQ guys, where Draymond's out there every night, where Klay's out there every night, where Steph's out there every night, and they play and they have such a chemistry. I want to know how Wiggins fits into that. So if you can get a little taste of that before next season, I think it's better.
Also, you brought up Draymond Green. He has been out there, basically, of the core four, he has been out there by himself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think bringing Steph back would do a lot for him.
Right.
Also, I say this all the time, if you tell fans enough times, loudly enough, that the regular season doesn't matter, they will start to believe you. And that is not what we want as a league. The regular season is most of what we watch in basketball. It should be fun.
Mm-hmm.
It should include our stars. It should include Steph Curry. Mm-hmm. I'm excited for him to come back. And by the way, their lottery position is going to be fine. They're going to be fine next year. They will get a good young player. And then they will also have Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green and Steve Kerr coaching. It's going to be a fine. Coming up next, we're going to play the stat market here at The Jump. Should we buy or sell CP3's clutch numbers, Westbrook's leading points in the paint, and the Lakers as the best in the West defensively? Stick around to find out. The NBA playoff push continues with our Friday night doubleheader. First, we have Nuggets Thunder, 8 o'clock Eastern, and then Zion and the Pelicans are in the Rose City to face the Blazers. Coverage starts with NBA Countdown, 7 o'clock Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. I'm here with Brian Windhorst, Matt Barnes. Guys, NBA games resume tonight. Yay!
Yeah.
Before they do, though, it's time for another edition of the Stat Market. We give you the numbers, and these guys will tell us they're buying if they think that stock will remain steady or increase. Sell if they think it will decrease. So first up, Chris Paul. He's your league leader in clutch time scoring. That's the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter and overtime when the score is within 5 points. So, Brian, are you buying or selling that CP leading the pack here will continue?
That is such a ridiculous number that I was inclined to say sell because I just think nothing against him. I just don't think he can keep that up. But then I saw that alley-oop that he threw down in the All-Star game on Sunday, and I was like, you know what? Maybe I should just buy everything Chris Paul right now. I mean, look at this. Anyway, how did he even know to throw it to him?
Like, I told him he hadn't been up that high since 07.
Seriously, how did he even know to throw it to him? What was he even doing throwing it to him?
He credited that he doesn't eat meat anymore.
Yeah.
He said, I feel like 5 years
Look at him, explosion.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head, Rach. I got a chance to talk to Chris after the game. I congratulate him on the changing of the new format and how well he played. But I'm definitely buying his clutch. He's always been clutch. And I think he had, you know, subpar years, solid year first year. Last year in Houston wasn't very good, and people started writing him off with his age and everything. But I know talking to him in the summer, I see him a lot. He's very serious about his new diet and the not eating meat and really working on his body, and that's all he's been doing in Oklahoma City. You know, so you thought we went into the season that he'd probably be traded at some point, but I think he's really captured the imagination of these fans, also while mentoring these younger players.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm definitely buying CP's clutchness, and I see it continuing throughout the season.
I'm buying because of what you said. He's so far ahead. So if he drops a little bit, I mean, it's a lot to catch up to. And by the way, you're right. Chris Paul has always been clutch.
Always.
And look, I said it last season through the season. I'm going to keep saying this. His numbers weren't great last year because when he was playing with James Harden on the court, numbers went down. And he was playing with James Harden a chunk of the time.
Right.
If you look at his on-off numbers, even last season,
solid,
which was supposedly not his good season in Houston, they were good numbers.
Absolutely.
So he went to a new team that did not have his ball dominant, a fellow guard.
Mm-hmm.
And look, he's playing
well. He had that hamstring injury before the All-Star break last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went and got it treated and came back. He's been a different player since he came back.
Well, you can see, I mean, I saw his happy birthday, Jada. They were just on vacation, and you saw him with his shirt off, and I'm just like, I don't remember that player. He's at his age, like, cut up, shredded. So, like I said, he's really taken his health and his eating habits much more important, taking care of his body. So I see this continuing.
Nice. All right, let's get up to the Bucks All-Star, Chris Middleton, who is quietly putting up a pretty phenomenal season, guys. Averages of 20 per game, 50% from the field, 44% from three, 90% from the free throw line. Here are the guys who have had 50, 40, 90 averages with 20 points per game over a full season. Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Dirk Nowitzki, Larry Bird, who did it twice. That is quite a list. Matt, are you buying Middleton competing this season and staying in that range?
That's a hell of a list, first and foremost, and I think he will stay in that lane. My only question with him is his clutchness in the playoffs. He gets paid. He got rewarded handsomely. He's their second guy, and I think to get over the hump, they're going to need Giannis to be Giannis, him to be himself, and then Eric Bledsoe to step up. So I've never questioned the regular season numbers with him. He's a tremendous player that flies under the radar because he doesn't say anything. He just does his job, and he plays in Milwaukee, and he does it well every night. But like I said, what I want to see from him is that next step in the playoffs, because they're going to need it if they were going to win a championship.
Yeah, and his numbers were solid in the playoffs last year, but he did only shoot 42%. So that is a challenge. And I think the shooting 90% from the foul line, like, you literally just can't miss.
I mean, that's...
And you just can't miss.
And by the way, there's no Giannis effect there. You're all by yourself.
Right, you're right. But yeah, I think if it's a regular season, I think absolutely he has a great chance to do this, but I don't know about postseason.
I just think that, again, what we talked about in the Lakers segment, what I saw the All-Stars do to Giannis in that fourth quarter, and it's a version of what we saw Toronto do, and Boston certainly has done it at different times over recent playoffs. they're going to need Chris Middleton to step up even more than he is with those incredible numbers, because you got to make him pay on the other rest of the side. All right, I want to move on to Russell Westbrook, who is leading the league with a whopping 21.1 points in the paint per game since January 1st. That places him ahead of guys who dominate like Giannis, Ben Simmons, and Zion in that span. So, Brian, are you buying or selling this trend will continue?
I mean, there is no doubt that he has been the major beneficiary of the going to the super small ball. There's nobody in his way, although in that case, Brooke Lopez was in his way, so went right through him. When he gets ahead of steam, it doesn't matter what his size is. He can overcome anybody. But that number is so enormous that I don't know how he can maintain it. But they are playing a game which we've never really seen before. So right. I'm sort of in the middle. I guess I'm going to sell, because I just can't see him maintaining those numbers that high. But I also am sort of curious to see if he can.
I'm going to buy it for the regular season game. Same thing I'm saying about Middleton, because the regular season, the game's faster. It's more spread out. You're more in transition. Although they're playing a type of ball we haven't seen since Golden State was really in their heyday, the playoffs is a little bit slower, and people are going to be a lot bigger at the rim. So, you know, if Giannis can't get his stuff off, you know, right. in the paint in playoff time, it's hard for me to think that a 6'4 guy can. But to me, no one wants it more than Russ. So if it stays on that, like you said, Brooke Lopez in his way, he ran right through him. No one in the league plays harder than Russ, and I love that about him. But like I said, the playoffs, the pace changes, the tempo changes, and the defenses are a lot tighter. But throughout the regular season, I can see him staying up there at least 20 points a game, maybe not 21 points, but 20 points a game in the paint for a guard is incredible.
I know. Yeah. Incredible. It's amazing.
Right? And by the way, he was coming on even before they made the Clint Capella trade. He had a good month or so before that.
James Harden's numbers have come down,
and
the Westbrook numbers have gone up, and the Rockets have played better.
Better.
So that's been an interesting development.
It is the idea, right? Yeah. It might not. I don't know to what degree that was James's idea, but in general, the idea of James scoring 40-plus a game wasn't working long-term for them. So they had to make a change.
Incredible numbers. Like I said, James is one of the most gifted offensive players we've ever seen, but that's not winning basketball. James is going to go out and kill and set all kinds of records scoring, but they're going to continue to stay where they're at. I think there has to be more balance so you can hold more people accountable and then let other people touch the ball. People have to understand, fans looking in, that when the rest of your team is rolling, y'all remember Kobe said, you can't load up on that one star because you have to honor everyone else. When James is the only one rolling, you can sag and James is going to kill, but no one else is going to do anything, and that's how you're not going to advance. So I love the fact that Russ has kind of figured out where he can do and what he can do with James on the court, and James really kind of taking a step back, like, hey, I mean, we are winning. I'm sure James, that, you know, he's studying this and understanding we are winning. My numbers aren't as high as they were, but at the end of the day, I've accomplished everything I can individually. What's next for me?
Yep, absolutely. Well, he hopes it's a title. I want to hit the LA teams, though, because they also hope that they get a title this year. The Lakers rank fifth in defensive efficiency. That's one spot ahead of the Clippers. Guys, the Clippers' defense was hyped as potentially all-time greats, right? This was supposed to be record-setting. They haven't really had their full team for much of the year. So, Matt, I thought this one was interesting. Do you buy or sell the Lakers' defense finishing ahead of the Clippers' defense for the regular season?
In the regular season, it's a toss-up to me. It doesn't really matter to me. What matters is in the playoffs, and that's when I think that the Clippers and Doc's game plans, they'll really be able to lock in. You know, adding the Morris twin and whether they get Reggie Jackson as well. I mean, they got plenty of offensive firepower, but I think where they're going to be able to hang their hat is hopefully if they can all get healthy and be on the court at the same time. That death lineup of defense with Pat Beverly, Paul, Kawhi, Montrez and Morris is going to be hard to get by. So, like I said, right now, we haven't consistently seen them together enough to really make a jump in the playoffs, but I know Doc's focus in the playoffs is going to be defense, and that's where I'm taking their defense, and that's where I'm taking them to win the championship.
As a quick aside, did you see what the Bucks ranked there, their number was? They were 3.5 points higher than anybody else, which in that ranking system is enormous.
Yes.
What I think is going to happen here, just to functionally and tactfully answer this question, I'm going to say sell, because I think the Lakers have a pretty big cushion. They have a 4-game cushion. I expect them to take, by the way, just look at that. Look at the Bucks.
Yes.
Look how far the Bucks from the Raptors, and then look at how tight the Raptors are to everybody else.
Yep.
That's why the Bucks are awesome. All right. Anyway, I think the Lakers have a 4-game lead, and I just think they're going to rest some guys down the stretch, whereas the Clippers, I feel like we're going to need to play together more and actually try to use these games. So I just think functionally, not because I think the Lakers stink, I just think the Clippers might pass them for that reason.
I think that the playoff races for seeding in both of these conferences are going to be fascinating, because who plays who when is going to lead to so much stuff, so especially once we get into March.
And I also think the Clippers are the one team that don't really care about their, I mean, that top two or three. Yeah. They don't need it. You know what I mean? I think the Lakers, with their team all being new, they want to play. The Bucks are playing as hard as they can because that's just what kind of team they are. I think the Clippers have been pacing themselves the whole entire season, staying within the mix. And as they get healthy, as players, we know this second half run is when the season starts getting serious. You're going to see, you know, the defense is going to change. The tempo of the game is going to change these last 25 games. And that's where I see the Clippers locking in if they can get healthy.
Yep, absolutely. All right, that is the because coming up, we're going to take a look at the top 10 fails of the season so far. We've given you all kinds of good plays for the past few days. The bill is coming due after this commercial break. First, though, here's what The Jump recommends for today. Tim Bontemps has an article up on the app detailing 9 chaotic moments that could shake up the NBA. One of the 9 important questions asked in the article, quote, what does Giannis do June 30th? Check it out during the break. This Sunday, 9 o'clock Eastern, right here on ESPN, it's the premiere of D-Wade, Life Unexpected. This is such a good documentary, guys. It gives a very, very honest look at the life and career of one of the all-time greats. I've seen it. It's fantastic. I could not recommend it enough. Welcome back. We are just hours away from the return of NBA action after the All-Star break, so let's use this as an opportunity to, oh yes, run back the top 10 funniest fails of the season so far. We've done crossovers, we've done great shots, and now the bloopers. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope's layup wedgie versus the Warriors. So you want to put it in the basket.
You couldn't do that, you tried.
Yeah. Right in there.
It happens.
Jared Dudley, let's go. Yeah. Anthony Davis is amazing. Number 9, Bradley Beal getting just a little bit too cocky after the shot attempt against the Hornets. Because it doesn't go in, and yet.
I love the music, by the way.
I think that's the Gilbert Arenas effect. I think because he wore that uniform, and he used to do that stuff every once in a while. Sometimes his went in, but
That's the Kemba Walker.
Kemba Walker, we've seen some other players do it. Nick Young, right? With
Yes.
Yep. Number 8, Smiley attempts a massive throwdown against the Lakers. The Warriors bench goes wild, except, again, in the basket. That's where it's supposed to go, is in the basket.
Flat tire. It happened.
What had happened was.
Flat tire.
Look at those guys. Look at them. That's amazing.
Yeah, let's not bring Steph Curry back. Let's make this guy 25 minutes.
Woo, didn't even hit the rim. Number 7, Tristan Thompson trying to impersonate an NBA point guard. It does not go well.
I think this is the moment where John Vilan started reconsidering. That by the way, that moment in the game, it was a vital moment, and he did that. And,
I'm confused. Like, was the shot clock running? Did I miss something?
No.
They had a full shot clock?
It was a close game in the last 2 minutes. Nobody knows what happened.
There was a clock in the corner. It was the last 3 minutes. He did not have to do that.
Oh, that's what I'm saying.
Number 6, Harden doesn't get a foul call, slams the ball out of frustration.
Oh.
And we know where that ball goes. Yeah.
I like how he plays it off like, eh.
Josh Hart is amazing.
He had a little protection there with that beard, but if that was just naked face, that might have busted a lip.
Number 5, Donovan Mitchell finding himself in the wrong place at the wrong time. I believe this happened on the same night as the Harden one.
Again, he's just smiling.
Look at him.
Enjoying his time.
Guys like to take a little rest when they're lying down there. Not so much like that. Joe Ingles is amused. And there you go. Number 4, Colin Sexton glitches,
another,
I guess, mid-closeout against the Raptors. I can't. This was a lot.
I actually would say this might have been what he was taught to do, to try to guard both. Yeah.
Yeah, but, that's definitely what he's taught.
He has a weird look to it.
It's like Chevy Checker. I don't know. All right.
Again, John Beilein reconsidered.
Number 3. The man walked away from $12 million rather than to stay with that organization. Look at LeBron pulling off the most low-key travel in NBA history.
Did they call it?
I don't think they did.
I think afterward LeBron said he just blanked out.
Yeah. He was watching the play develop is what he said.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Number 2. Eric Bledsoe. Forgetting to inbound the ball. This was amazing.
Wow.
Well, he just wanted to initiate the offense.
They were giving it to him in the locker room.
Yeah, after this.
This
remember
is
that.
Stuff we talked trash for the next few days on that.
Yep.
Or the next few months.
Yes. He said that he cannot remember ever doing that prior in basketball. And yet there he was. Number 1, My favorite and yours, Patrick Beverley's emphatic flop while defending James Harden. This was amazing. Look at the artistry here with the head going back. Not everyone can do that, guys. That takes skill, practice.
I hate everything about that. I absolutely hate people that flop. It's the worst thing. It messes the game up. You look stupid when you do it.
Well, that did happen.
I thought that was really funny. Look, the fact that he did it on James Harden too.
Classic.
I know I got several texts from around the league. Amused. Let's just call him amused. Thank you guys all for sticking with us through this break after the All-Star break. I love all the ways our producers and staff have gathered up.
Absolutely.
The best of the season so far. Up next, we will talk about Jimmy Butler. Is he a top five MVP candidate? You can find out in our League Pass Game of the Night discussion because we have basketball tonight. First, though, it's time for our second distant replay of the day. This one, this date, 2004, Big Ben Wallace. Who should also get into the Hall of Fame.
I need some Tylenol.
That ticket.
The fro was out that night.
Ben Wallace with a poster dunk.
Sorry, Kevin Garnett.
This was amazing.
But Kevin could Garnett do that to players like that.
Big Ben Wallace
and
came back.
Four-time Defensive Player of the Year.
He also could hit threes in practice.
Two championships? What did they get? One championship?
Crunch time here on The Jump. I think Pablo went to Harvard. Just saying. Zach Lowe reporting that the NBA is likely to keep the target score ending the All-Star game had in this recent weekend. They're going to try to keep it for 2021. Matt, do you like it at the end of All-Star?
Yeah, I like the target score. Maybe a little bit higher, but the only thing I didn't like is you can't end the game as hard as these guys are playing on free throws. They got to check that up like a half court, like a pickup game. That was my only gripe is, you know, don't, as hard as these guys play, don't let AD win it on the free throw line. I don't think AD wanted to win it that way either.
I absolutely love this. I would watch it again and again and again. It was one of my favorite moments of the season.
By the way,
forget about this All-Star game. Do it for the in-season tournament Adam Silver wants to do. That's what I say.
I do think the fact that this went so well and was unorthodox will help him make his case for other unorthodox changes, maybe like an in-season tournament. All right, take a listen to this, please.
KG had never seen me play against Mike.
We in Chicago. You know, it's my rookie year.
And I got about 24 going into the fourth quarter.
So as we come out the timeout, just I'm on, y'all. I can't even explain it.
We come out of the fourth quarter, KG like, serve him. He can't guard you. I was quiet. I'm looking at him like, chill.
Mike can hear me. So I double back like, yeah.
I don't care. Keep going at him. Wild too strong for this dude, man.
So as I say that, feel it.
I was like, Mike, he don't know the rules of the game, man. He's just a young puppy. You know what I mean?
So now MJ on the back leg joint.
Okay, you talking?
Okay, yeah. I can't even really describe the next, like, 6 to 7 minutes of play, yo.
Went to the fourth quarter, man. That man got about 17 quick.
We down 25 now. It was just at 2.
Mad, looking at KG, looking at me, looking at KG.
It got bad quick, yo. I come to the joint. And then they know this. When you come and you've been on the run, when you not got back on the floor, got back, had to rebound, and you feel like you on defense all the time, you come to the bench like this. So I was like, Jay, man, my bad, dog. I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry. He like, it's cool, man. I told you, just shut your ass up, man. You're not fine. And Mike came down. Okay, young fella. Okay, damn, young fella. Damn, y'all. Y'all done? Damn, y'all done?
That is amazing. That was former Timberwolf teammates Isaiah Ryder, Kevin Garnett, Isaiah, of course, speaking first on the radio, and then KG on the All the Smoke podcast with Matt Barnes and Stephen Jackson saying the last time he ever tried to talk trash to Michael Jordan.
Amazing. That was probably one of them. We've been blessed to have such tremendous interviews on All the Smoke. KG's energy, storytelling. Anthony, you guys did a hell of a job editing because he was cussing that whole time. So great editing.
Shout
staff,
out producer Chris.
When he said he was on that back leg joint.
Classic.
I lost. You can picture it.
I lost. You see it. And he was sweating while he was telling the story too. Like it was
all real.
He's a world class. Right. He'd be in the Sweat Hall of Fame and the Naismith Hall of Fame.
And the Storytelling Hall of Fame. Did you ever talk trash to MJ, Matt?
I didn't get a chance play against MJ. So Kobe and I got into it. It's well documented, so that was kind of my thing, but I never got a chance to, and I'm glad that the way KG and Jay are explained, I don't want no part of that.
Nope. All Michael needed was just a little bit. Right, I mean, frankly, KG went all the way, and he was thrilled for it, Michael, because nothing pumped him up more. Right. But basically, if he felt you were looking at him, like maybe you thought you could take him, that was enough for him to just kill you.
Check that interview out. It was amazing.
Yes, for sure. All right, our League Pass game of the night, Heat Hawks. Jimmy Butler has had such a strong season, averaging just under 21 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists per game. His Heat currently the 4th seed in the East. I think his MVP case, if he has one or not, goes way beyond the numbers, though. Would you put him in that top 5 MVP?
I really sort of disregard the numbers, because if you watch the way he plays and sets up his teammates, he could average way more points.
Yes, he just is not choosing.
And that team is so young. Like, their system really helps, and they're very disciplined, but that team is so young, and he's such a vital cog for them. You know, you do vote for 1 through 5. There's a lot of candidates for number 5, but if I had to vote today, he would be very strongly in position in that 4 or 5 slot.
I think, you take a look at his presence and what he does for that team, the energy. You know, when he signed there, everyone knew he was a blue-collar superstar. Exactly what that franchise is about, exactly what Pat Riley's looking for. But the confidence he has these younger players playing with, and the fact that they're 4th in the East when people really didn't have him on the radar at the beginning of the season, also says a lot to what Jimmy's brought to that team. His work ethic, it's contagious. You know, guys are getting in extra hours of working and leading by Jimmy's example, and I've loved what he's done over there.
Somebody from the Heat told me it was like Dwayne Wade and Udonis Haslam had a child. That's how much they love Jimmy Butler.
Absolutely. And look, we talk about empty stats guys, right? And we criticize that. So to me, the opposite is certainly true, right? When I'm taking into account most valuable player, again, I'm not putting him ahead. He's not leading. He's not beating out Giannis. But when I'm talking about who are your 5, and I'm thinking about who to put in, as you said, that 4 or 5 spot, value is leadership.
Yeah.
Value goes beyond the stats.
He plays point guard for them. Yes. He guards four
power
men.
Forwards,
He passes up on shots to take care of other guys. He sets the tone in the locker room. I mean, he checks every box.
Every box for them. And he has basically changed the fortune and future of that organization, too, because guys want to come play with him. And now this next coming summer or the summer after
Grab somebody for sure.
He is going to be a magnet for other players.
And
so
I think
again,
when we look
value
at awards,
comes in a lot of ways.
Yeah, when we look at awards, we look at points per game.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's not, there's so much more to it.
It's not everything. It's why we might want to have 2 awards. This is just the buzzer. According to our own Adrian Wojnarowski and Malika Andrews, Kyrie Irving is considering treatment options on his right shoulder impingement, including the possibility of surgery. He is expected to reach a decision in the next few days. Matt, we talked a little bit yesterday about Kyrie being a little gun-shy with surgery. He's had infections. But do you think he should just get this thing care of?
Yeah, I think he should, because everyone knew once KD came back, this is what we're going to start judging this team on. So you don't want that lingering into next season. This season is kind of whatever with them. But I would definitely get it taken care of so next year they can hit the floor running.
We will be looking for his decision. We are out for today. George Sedano filling in for me tomorrow. See ya.